Welcome to another exciting episode of the NIDS View, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we will discuss and analyze a recent topic and provide insight to how it affects our national deterrence. The view of the hosts and guests are their own. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to another great episode of the NIDS View, a podcast of the National Institutes for Deterrence Studies, where we have a roundtable discussion about things we've read and, you know, ideas. And we often pick an article that sort of gives us an opportunity to talk about a set of subjects, and we've done that today. Of course, I'm joined by Curtis McGiffin and Jim Petrosky, as is often the case. And so it's, you know, we had another nice article, Bob Peters, a friend of NIDS, and, you know, he's at the Heritage Foundation, and he wrote a new study called A Roadmap for Rebuilding America's Nuclear Arsenal. And he essentially sort of had a series of bullet point ideas that he thought were things that needed to be done, which those bullet points serve as is sort of a entree into a discussion on a variety of topics. And so I thought we'd use, you know, Bob's report as sort of a way to, you know, structure the discussion. So, and of course, as you know, the great thing about March, you know, it's middle of March, or early March, and that is, of course, that it's spring training. And for those who are based, I mean, you're in Tennessee, Jim's in Dayton. I think you probably have minor league teams there, so, you know, baseball will come to you as well. But for those of us here in Kansas City, this is likely to be the best season we've had in probably a decade. So we're pretty excited about baseball.
And, just like your, you know, football team, right? Yeah, great.
Yeah. I mean, hey, everybody, you know, it's like Alabama football. If the Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl, it was a failure of a year. Just like when Alabama doesn't win the national championship, that year was a disaster. And so nobody thinks that way about the Royals quite yet, you know, but we're hoping to get in that, you know, sort of get there. But so let's, you know, happy spring training to everybody out there. I know there's a lot of, in the nuclear community, there's a lot of baseball fans. I'm on some lists, and, you know, we talk baseball and nuclear weapons. So it's good to see everybody's out there loving both. But, okay, so to get to Bob's article, the first thing he says is that the president, that being President Trump, should issue an executive order on rebuilding the nuclear arsenal. And he should issue this executive order to the government. And, of course, what that should do is call, you know, for what will be done, the timeline it will be done, and for the president to SecDef, SecEnergy, to get updates and to really push this thing through. So, gentlemen, let me sort of open the floor there for you guys. How do you – do we need any more? You know, President Biden issued new guidance for the employment of the force and strategic guidance for – that's, of course, classified, so we can't really talk about the details of it. But – there's very clearly an increased, you know, emphasis on the threat out there. So is this a step that President Trump needs to take?
So, well, my first piece when I read that is I'm curious why we need an executive order, something we're already doing. We're in the process of rebuilding, you know, rebuilding the nuclear arsenal. We're modernizing. We certainly need emphasis on it. I'm not sure what an executive order would do aside from maybe, and it would be a part of that executive order, shielding funds, personnel, et cetera, in a nuclear business. But I believe we've done that already, as far as I know. You certainly do not want to take your finger off the pulse. In fact, you want to stick your foot on the accelerator, if anything, and keep the move things along. But I'm not sure another executive order just does that. Now, some of the other concepts that Bob brings up, I think, are really good. But getting the executive order from the top, it seems like we're already doing that. And we've been talking about it for quite a while, although it's being stalled. So we'll go from there.
Curtis? I want to add to this because this is out of this long list of ideas that Bob Peters puts out. This is probably my favorite. I think an executive order along the lines of Iron Dome for America, which I know has been reclassified as the Golden Dome. But what this does is after 30 plus years of being embarrassed of our nuclear enterprise and trying to reduce it and hide it and let it atrophy and all of these things, an executive order pronouncing the value of it and prioritizing it appropriately. I've said on a number of podcasts here that we don't do things or we don't do things fast enough because we don't want to, because we don't make it a priority. And I think an executive order from President Trump would be that kind of impetus to say, this is extremely important to the Peace Through Strength initiative and to ensuring the kind of global peace and stability that I think President Trump and war aversion that I think President Trump has been preaching through the campaign and up through his recent statement to it's not a State of the Union address, the look at what I've done in 4 weeks address to Congress a week or so ago. And so I would say that this is a great way to energize the bureaucracy and all of the critical infrastructure and the defense industries to make them understand that this is truly the number one priority because of what it does. And so that's why I think that's important, and I think that carries on to the next thing here with the delivery.
Curtis,
hold on, one more thing. One thing that Bob doesn't do is he doesn't call for a deterrence czar. And there's been some conversation about that out there in the world. I don't necessarily say it tongue in cheek. The Biden administration tried to tout integrated deterrence as an alternative method to nuclear deterrence, but that really needed somebody to husband all these resources together, right, and sort of synchronize them in some way. That never really occurred, which is why it was largely, I think, a failure. And so if we're going to have this kind of impetus on nuclear deterrence and rebuilding the arsenal, some people have said that the budget needs to be separated from the rest of the services so that they're not trimmed the same way, looked at the same way. I'm actually in favor of that as well. And maybe you need a czar to sort of oversee that to ensure that the things that need to be done get done. This is where I think the Navy has an interesting way of doing business through the SSP, having its own three-star admiral that sort of ensures that all of its nuclear leg is focused under one leader, one office that is dedicated to making that happen. We need that at the national level, and I think it starts with an executive order.
Well, Curtis, let me go back. My issue with the executive order concept is you almost jumped into the second bullet, which I will say was my favorite bullet, but that's okay. That's why I tried to interrupt you. But also, you know, this is one executive order among the 400 that had already been issued. And I think it somewhat waters it down because as an executive order, one, it's not long-standing. It's only as long as the Trump administration's here, which is 4 years. And we've already have a modernization and, on rebuilding the nuclear arsenal. It's already there. It's already written. It's already been congressionally approved. It's long-standing.
It's all late. It's all over budget. And it's all underwhelming.
And all the executive order is just another one of those. However, you need to get the people behind you. So in the initial, what I've seen with the initial modernization effort is you have a bunch of us, which is not a bunch when you consider 300 million people in this country. And I don't know how many people vote, but let's just say 150 million. Adam will tell me it's some other number, like 12. But anyway, but the number of people voting, the voters have to understand this. And this is why I think less than an executive order and more important, a series of talks from the presidential level, from many levels, talking about the importance and of our nuclear arsenal and educating our folks to include some teeth to an educational effort to get young workers, college graduates, high school graduates, technical workers, all understanding why it's vital for them to become part of this process and why it's important to them, important to the nation, and then putting some teeth, being funding behind the education, the technical development, the schools to understand why we have a national security effort in this United States and why it relates to our Constitution and our civic duties to be part of this is more important, in my opinion, than an executive order, which is going to fall out among the others. This thing's already happening. Now, if I want to put an executive order out there, I just don't think that's as important as the next bullet, which, by the way, I'll read it here, deliver a national address on the importance of the nuclear arsenal. I think much bigger than that. A national address, a series of discussions, whether they're fireside chats, whether they're whatever we want to make them, to begin to inform the nation of something that all of us have gone through, of what we've gone through as a country, and what we do as an organization, try to inform our citizens what's happening. Because I don't know about you, Curtis, but when I go out into the basic citizenry and talk about who we are and our nuclear arsenal, people have no clue. No clue we're even modernizing. They don't know that this national effort's going on. And I don't think an executive order is going to solve that problem. So that's my opinion.
But the problem with both of these is that you would need necessarily a president who shares your view. And President Trump has said first at Davos, and then in a press conference in the Oval Office, that he wants to denuclearize, that we have enough weapons to destroy the world 50 times over, and that we're going to get with Xi and Putin. We're going to cut our defense budgets in half. We're going to denuclearize. And so I guess my question would be, if you're the president, you're Donald Trump, and these have been the statements you've made sort of in the first few weeks of your administration, are you then going to go sign an executive article saying these are really important and that you're going to watch them like a hawk, and then go around the country, make national addresses? Because, you know, what would the American people say? It's like, okay, so are we going to denuclearize or are we going to modernize? I mean, maybe for now the president can say, hey, I'm trying to denuclearize. I want to be able to cut this. And then, of course, if the Russians and the Chinese do exactly what we think they'll do, which is the exact opposite, then the president has the room to come back and say, you know, guys, fellow Americans, I tried. I gave it, the old college try. Yeah. And these guys would not, reduce their arsenals, stop their expansive building of, offensive military capabilities. So now, because they won't do it, we can't fall behind. And maybe so, that's sort of the path we're going down. I'm not 100% sure. But otherwise, it would be illogical to do these two things.
Yeah, no, Adam, I tend to agree with you. Again, none of us are in the head of Donald Trump. I'm not sure I'd want to be there. He's moving so fast, I think I'd swirl around. But I do think that's part of the deal. I mean, I've said several times on this podcast, I'm all about denuclearizing. So as soon as our adversaries all denuclearize and show us that they've denuclearized, then we'll start doing it too. And then if they start building in a very dynamic way, we'll have parity with them. with them as they build, we'll build. So, it's the choice of the world. Now, do I see that's realistic? I've not seen that realistically at all. But I would love to see a world in which we, kumbaya, I get rid of, I can take all the locks off my doors and get rid of my security cameras because they cost me money. And I can use that for wonderful things like building a library or adding a new school bus, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So conceptually, I think it's an interesting idea, but realistically, I don't see it as a good idea.
People just need to play Assassin's Creed. For anybody who's familiar with the video game Assassin's Creed, which then became a movie in 2016, the whole point of Assassin's Creed is that the Knights Templar are trying to find the apple that will then allow them to get rid of free will so that humans can't be violent anymore. And that's the whole point of it. And so until that day comes, which probably never will happen, people are going to be greedy and selfish and violent and all those other things. And therefore, and even if they were, you know, Rob Kittinger and I recorded an episode of NucleCast, and, you know, Rob's one of our guys, and Rob and I, he mentioned this, and I had never thought about this, but he said, hey, even if you could make all these things happen, you still need nuclear weapons for planetary defense. And I was like, you know what? But he's kind of right, you know, because we do have asteroids that come close by, and if one is on a trajectory, you would need nuclear weapons to move it off a, you know, off a collision course, right? Because that's what killed all the dinosaurs. So therefore, you know, you need them for that.
It gave us our oil.
What movie did you really see that one in, Adam? what's your movie reference for that?
Yeah, that there we go. That's another movie reference, right? That's one of Aerosmith's great songs right there, the theme song.
Go ahead, Curtis. You've been biting on this. I saw you moving around, agitating around there.
I just don't even take any of this seriously. It's just not worth the rabbit hole. We got a lot of list to discuss here from Buffy. We are not going to make conventional war great again by disarming the nations or the world. It's just not going to happen. And so this is President Trump negotiating and posturing. And moving forward, maybe this executive order doesn't have to happen tomorrow, but 6 months from now, 9 months from now, when he's disappointed by what China and Russia have to say in response to his offer, then he will jump right in and give it. I do like your idea for fireside chats. Reagan used to do the Saturday morning chit chats. I'm not sure that President Trump is. Either interested or steeped enough in the theories of nuclear deterrence and these sorts of things that he would be the best salesman for why these things matter. But you know,
wait a minute,
other people who could do it. So
you've given me a really good idea. So this is my shout out to our audience. If President Trump wants to come on to the NIDS View. And we can talk about this. This would be great for our audience to hear views on this. So that's my shout out. If Very anyone good. Hears me, go ahead and help us out.
All right. Well, maybe we can get through a few more of these, Adam.
Okay. So then of course, the next one is the national level stuff that Bob talks about. He says, issue an executive order on rebuilding the nuclear arsenal.
We did that one already.
Oh, sorry. Wrong one. I'm turning
Put
the page.
Put your beer down there, Adam.
issue a nuclear posture review. So let's cover this one quickly. So I'm going to say no, or just dust off the one from 2018, change it slightly. But that is I agree with Frank Miller that, you know, we need to focus on the guidance, the classified guidance, and that there's things that we could change there, but an NPR takes a lot of manpower, a lot of time. There's a lot of coordination, and I don't think it's worth it. We sort of understand the threat. We don't need it. But if we want to dust off and tweak 2018s to replace 2022s, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So, I've been pretty public about this in a number of different venues. I completely disagree. I think an NPR, a new NPR, is necessary. It doesn't have to be as verbose or as repetitive. It doesn't have to explain every angle of the world's situation or every detail about deterrence theory. But what it does need to be is act as a public policy document, sort of a declaration, if you will, for adversaries and allies alike to review and see what it is, what are the intentions of this president with regard to the nuclear posture? What changes does he want to make or think needs to be made in order to ensure what's going on? And it serves as a source document for the services to point to when they ask for funding for the items. They can point to it and say, see, Congress, the president says we're supposed to do this, therefore fund us. And I think these things matter. I think it matters when you communicate to the force what the priorities are. Is if you don't, then the priorities will be whatever whatever you name the general or admiral thinks is sexy and is interesting to them, and it not, does not necessarily focus on what maybe the president's goals might be, which is to avert war. Okay, and so he's not interested in waging war. He's interested in averting war, and we must lay down the guidance to the force to understand that. And so as much as he wants to convert the warrior ethos or solidify the warrior ethos, we also need to codify the deterrence ethos. And there is work to be done. And it doesn't take much, Adam, because we're doing one right here in NIDS. We're working on a version of an NPR. So my suggestion might be is that ours will probably be less than 30 pages, and it will be quite compelling. And I think that if the services are not interested, or if the president is not interested in paying somebody to write an NPR, he can simply take ours and take from it what he will. It'll be a fantastic menu.
And he can do that when he comes on our podcast, and we can discuss it then. So that would be good. Wow. So Adam says he's fundamentally opposed to an NPR. Curtis is absolutely behind a new NPR. So I'm going to say it depends. It depends. Well, it depends on where we're heading. If we're heading the same direction we were before, then we're heading there as we were before. This is the directive. And move on, because it does take a lot of time. I agree with Adam. However, I'm hearing, the last week or so, I've heard a bit of difference coming out of the Trump administration I heard the first time around, which is causing me to begin to disagree with Adam, which I shamefully was with him before, but now going against Adam and going sort of Curtis's direction. But I would say whatever we do, if we build a new NPR, we don't get tied up in a 24-month or whatever process, tying up all the people that could be out advocating and teaching the public, bullet two, about the value of the nuclear deterrent. Because until you get the public on your side, the mandate will still not be there. And until you can get the public to understand the value, you're not going to get the interest from the people that are going to be doing the work for the next 65 years in building this new modern effort and understanding what it is. It's not magic, but it is important, and it is sometimes difficult. So you've got to get people involved now. So that's okay, middle of the road.
So we're two thirds of the way through the podcast, and we've got a lot to go. So I'm going to ask 30 seconds max. So the next one, I'm going to cut you off. I've got that magic button. I'll pull my wrap it up box. I borrowed it from Dave Chappelle. So I'll pull
You've already used 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's all you.
So develop a two peer deterrence strategy.
Yep. That's in the NPR next.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So that's an easy one. Okay, I'm going to take two at once. Reopen shuttered ballistic missile tubes and upload existing warheads onto the Minuteman III. I'm going to go no. I oppose both.
Okay. I am fully supportive of uploading the Minuteman III fleet. I am against opening the tubes. I think that's a little more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got no dog in this hunt except the following. We need an interim strategy as we modernize. And this strategy of uploading the existing warheads is an interim strategy. However, my fear is from a congressional budgeting standpoint, they'll go, well, they're already loaded up, so who needs Sentinel? And here we go again. And that's my only fear in that suggestion and strategy. Somebody's got to take the bull by the horns, because it's not the Trump administration that's going to make this work in the out years. It's the next administration and the one after that and the 20 after that. That's the fear.
Well, that's where your deterrence czar would help, as we message and strategize and formulate how those things would occur, working with the services to do this. This is this is something that's done completely, at least the uploading of the Minuteman would be largely done internally within the services. They could do it as they do maintenance. There's a number of ways of doing that. It took a number of years. You know, we didn't finally just the last demerged missile was just barely 10 years ago. So, I mean, it it's not like we don't know how to do this.
Yep.
And so, yeah, is it a few extra bucks in the budget? Yes. Again, if it's a priority, if there's an executive order that says this is our priority, it'll get done.
If the people are behind you, they'll get done. I'm going to keep fighting you on this, Curtis.
Yeah. I don't disagree in principle, but yeah, in practice, the problem is funding and then manpower. You know, mm-hmm, like if we want to put ships in dry dock to then start welding, we just don't have enough dry docks to build new ships and pull existing ships out of the water to then put new tubes in, because that's not an easy process.
Agreed.
Or, you know, Minuteman, it takes, if you wanted to MIRV a wing, that's going to take at least, if you could do it on time, at least a year. So
let's get started.
That's the challenge, though. Plus, you know, you need the warheads, and the warheads are missing gas transfer systems and all sorts of stuff that you've got to put in them. So I worry that you're going to distract from modernization.
Well, we're not. We they aren't the same people doing these the two different things. And no one's saying we're not going to get our hair mussed a little bit, right? So we have to. If it's a priority, you could find the funding. We have the manpower within the uniform services to do the uploading. It's just a matter of, we have targets that need to be covered, and we don't have the capacity to do it.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree, but I mean, we're having a hell of a time just building. 15 years into modernization, nothing new to show for it.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go to the next one. Double the production rate of the B-21. So we want more. My problem with this one is, you know, I fundamentally agree. We need lots more bombers, because the very purpose of the Air Force is to do long range strike. That's why the Air Force exists as an independent service, is long range strike. And so therefore you need airframes that can do that. But the problem is we're in a pilot shortage. So if you give me a lot more aircraft, I don't have pilots to fly them. I can probably train maintainers, and I'll need a lot more of them faster. I'm going to need a lot more cops to guard them and protect them. I can do that faster, but I have a big pilot shortage. And then later on, Bob suggests putting bombers on alert. Well, if I want to put bombers on alert, my crew ratio has to be at least 3. And then my pilot shortage is even worse now, because really, what does the Air Force do? It flies a little bit, but then it does a lot of other things.
So I let me jump in on this one. I agree to some extent here, and these are really two different things. I think we need the bombers faster, so doubling the production rate. That doesn't necessarily mean building more bombers, although that could be determined.
We do want more. I think that's one of the things
Bob says. And that's not anything that I don't think he even suggests in here, which is quite surprising. And then putting them on alert. Well, let's get them first, right? So he's referring to B-21s on alert. I think other bombers could be possibly brought on alert immediately, and the Air Force should probably figure out a way to do that and enhance our ability to provide that deterrent risk to the adversary. But producing more, I think we can solve. Going from 10 to 20 per year is not really going to impact the pilot production issues. I used to do pilot production years ago, and monitoring that from a headquarters standpoint, and it's not that hard to do that. So I think we can overcome that. I think the harder part is the maintenance. But we have to realize that we'll need more B-21s to cover what B-1s and B-2s used to do, right? Because they're smaller.
Absolutely,
they have less capacity. So I'm not sure how many folks are thinking about that. But if you want to drop the same amount of bombs, you may need more bombers. I don't know what that number is. The services should be thinking about it, and Congress should be thinking about how to fund that.
Well, and that's wholly my issue of an interim strategy, that you can't have everything you want, the B-21s. You can't just simply say, let's have them, and they're there. It takes time, and there's this concept called queuing theory. It happens with people. It happens with equipment. You want something. It takes time to produce it. It takes time to get it on the ground. You need the people. It's going to take time to build them up and get enough people to do the mission, whether it's maintenance or flying or loading or all the other stuff that our great military does. However, the interim strategy will begin to build that. That's why we need to start tomorrow. If you put bombers on alert, again, I'm not an Air Force guy, so a B-21, so there's another bomber out there with another number on it that I don't know, maybe a 52. But anyway, they could be on alert, and we could start building the force to support them as we move it forward. But it has to be a strategy that we go back to Congress and say, look, we need the people to do this, and here's why. They're out there, you know, they're out there working this. And I know you got to do something. You can't just wait, because mm-hmm. every time we wait, we get further behind. And that's the issue I have with the idea of wanting it all at once. I don't have an issue with putting them on strip alert. In fact, I've mentioned in this podcast before, we should have bombers on alert. That's a great strategic message to say, knock it off.
Well, I mean, the only place you're going to put a nuclear bomber on alert is you're going to have to do it at Minot, because you're not going to put bombers. You can't really put bombers on alert at Barksdale, because we don't have a WSF that has weapons. So you're going to put them on alert at Minot. You may or may not do that in the dead of winter because of, you know, conditions. We've never set alert at Minot before
in the dead of winter.
Well, we have.
Global warming is probably better now.
Yeah, the global warming has solved that problem.
We have, but we're not in the same Air Force that we were in 1992 and before. And the crew ratios and all the things, this is not the same force.
I don't have
the capacity we had.
I thought we were the most powerful Air Force in the world. I thought we could do anything.
Well, you know, I just read today or yesterday, the Chinese, the PLAF, the People's Liberation Army Air Force, now gets more flight training hours per year than the U.S. Air Force does.
That'd be fascinating.
In their modern advanced, well, I don't know how good what they're calling their fourth and fifth generation fighters. I'm not 100% sure how exactly good they are, but they're supposedly getting more flight training hours than we are. So, you know, we're flying less, you know, we have all sorts of shortages. It's, you know, we're, you know, our flying time, you know, our flying to B-1, that's a really expensive jet to fly.
Yep.
You know, the cost per hour is expensive. So there's all these things that circulate on at sort of at the operational and tactical level that make these aspirational goals really hard unless you dump people, money, you know, all sorts of things into it.
But you got to do it incrementally, whereas, you know, modernization, I mean, the end goal of modernization is a huge, huge mountain, you know, a big elephant to eat. But you do have to eat it one bite at a time, and you have to have something to eat in between while you're waiting for the elephant to even arrive. And that's where we are right now. That's why I think even some, you say putting, you know, bombers on alert at Minot only in the summer. Well, at least that's one step. And then maybe we look at the problem of not having a weapon. I can't remember the acronym, the weapons maintenance area in Shreveport. Maybe we need to, you know, or maybe we need to have it somewhere else. It needs to start going that direction. But I don't see anyone. And, you know, and when I read through this thing, Bob, and I like Bob a lot. But where are we putting that into the strategy for the U.S. to get through between now and the end of modernization?
It would be in the NPR. Hey, we're running out of time, so I want to go. I want to hit one of my favorites, and I don't want to miss this one. Bob brought up one that I thought was brilliant, and I hadn't thought of. That's not why it's brilliant, but I hadn't thought of it, and I wanted to call this one out, and that was to develop a long-range standoff nuclear munition for the F-35. And I thought this was interesting. He talks about, given the proliferation of adversary air defenses and other anti-access systems, the Air Force should examine the utility and feasibility of a long-range standoff nuclear weapon, blah, 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 blah. Would this be a JASSM-ERN?
No, because the JASSM-ER is a POS.
Okay.
Not a good weapon.
Okay,
it is not a good weapon.
Block two or a better JASSM. But essentially what he's saying is let's grab a long-range conventional missile that we already have and figure out a way to put a small nuclear warhead on it, kind of like what the French do, and figure out how we can employ that. What does that add to? And then all of a sudden, maybe we have an alternative to the LRSO or
but
the
you
Alchem.
Can't make it you can't make it. One of the points that he made was to make it globally employable, which, you know, I've gone through these efforts in the past to try to do that very thing. And it is, if you maintain particularly safety standards, when you've got nuclear weapons on jets, it is very, very, very difficult to move jets forward outside of places where we have, you know, the vaults for the B-61 and things like that. It is not that easy to just employ them. So, you know, while I'm in LRSO is not necessarily meant to be flown on a, you know, on a
little
F-35.
Jet. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's probably not the exact right thing, but you need something probably smaller than LRSO, but something that, and like range is your big issue, because JASSM ER still is not that long of a range. And so therefore, you know, how close are you going to get? Maybe you can get close enough with, you know, you're not going to go over country in China or somewhere and start shooting, you know, off of F-35s. So, I mean, there's a lot you got to do to sort of work this out. And if you're going to carry it in, you know, in its bomb bay or in its missile bay, then your size shrinks even more. So I wonder if F-35 maybe is more useful in Europe, but not useful in Asia. And it's got short legs anyways. So therefore, maybe you need something like Pershing 2, because Pershing 3, because Pershing 3 is a better way to get at Asia than say, F-35.
So something that's not in here is the advocacy of a new MRBM, medium-range ballistic missile for America, nuclear-armed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thanks for indulging me.
Well, since you're dusting off old systems and saying let's attach something to it, why don't we look at even shorter range and look at like a, I don't know, 155 howitzer and putting that back into our tactical nuclear force? I mean, might as well go ahead and look at the full range of capabilities. Again, it's messaging with capability we already have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, gents, we're out of time. We didn't get everyone, but we had a good discussion. So, of course, thanks.
Yeah, highly recommend our listeners check out that article.
Yeah, check it out. Read it for yourself and for the operators in the room who are listening. You know, send me an email and say, hey, man, this is a good idea or a bad idea for these reasons. And maybe I'll write an article and, you know, we'll talk through some of this. And because we have to, you know, iron sharpens iron.
That's right.
And so when we talk through these things and we figure out why we can and can't do stuff, that makes us all better. And we all have sort of a common goal. So, of course, thanks, Curtis. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks
to you, the listeners.
Thanks, Jim.
Keep checking us out on Global Security Review. Curtis had a great article Monday of this week.
Excellent article. Excellent.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I read it in three different places, too, by the way.
Yeah, so we've got lots going on. Curtis is, you know, using that very, very small brain he has to give some really good X tweets out there. You know, he puts all his effort in for the day.
I only think in 160 characters.
So, you know, we've got Twitter out there, the X, we've got podcasts. Jim's been recording some, he's doing a NIDS Academy course on, what is it on, Jim?
Electromagnetic pulse. And I have a future
pulse.
One on communications in a contested environment.
Ooh.
And
while I have the spectrum.
And while I have the floor, I want to remind everyone to get out there and find out when President Trump is going to come to our podcast. Can't follow up on that enough there, Adam.
Send him emails.
But seriously, go to our site. We are seeking donations for a variety of things. You didn't mention that, too. And I think it's really important that people understand you put your money where your mouth is, and this is important. And then come on our podcast, whether you're President Trump or another one of our listeners. So make sure we hit that.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. Thanks, gents. Thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode of the NIDS View. And always, we want to remind you to think deterrence.
Thank you for listening to the NIDS View. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative The NIDS View.
The NIDS Podcasting Network.